Week 3, the Book of Joel. As the early church met to celebrate one of Israel's key religious holidays, something extraordinary happened. As it says, quote, "When the day of Pentecost came, they were all together in one place. Suddenly, a sound like the blowing of a violent wind came from heaven and filled the whole house where they were sitting. They saw what seemed to be tongues of fire that separated and came to rest on each of them. All of them were filled with the Holy Spirit and began to speak in other tongues, as the Spirit enabled them." This is Acts 2:1-4. The people who witnessed this were amazed, and they tried to understand what was happening. So wild were the scenes that some believed they were witnessing an early morning drinking party. And at this, the Apostle Peter stood up to address the crowd, to explain exactly what was happening. These events, he argued, were none other than the fulfillment of God's ancient promises. Here, Peter quotes from two Old Testament books in particular, Joel and the Book of Psalms. Before we get to the use of Joel, however, we need to highlight some important background. This background was assumed by the early church, but will go unnoticed to most Christians today. Crucially, Pentecost was one of the three ancient pilgrimage feasts celebrated by the Jews, the others being Passover and Tabernacles. Three times a year, the people were to journey to Jerusalem to celebrate and to worship together. By the time of the New Testament, each of these feasts commemorated a key event in Israel's journey from Egypt to Promised Land. The Passover celebrated the Exodus, Pentecost celebrated the revelation at Mount Sinai, and Tabernacles celebrated the wilderness wanderings. When the people gathered in Jerusalem for Pentecost, therefore, they found themselves in the company of crowds of other pilgrims who were all celebrating God's covenant-making and Torah-giving at Mount Sinai. Yet, by New Testament times, the people understood these feasts looked not only backwards to Israel's defining moments, but also forward to a time when God would restore Israel and call the nations unto himself. See Zechariah 14:16 on this. There was some awareness, therefore, that ancient Israel's life was prototypical. That is, it was not just a pattern of the past, but also a pattern of the future. So when the disciples gathered for Pentecost, they did so in commemoration of God's covenant with Israel at Mount Sinai on the one hand, and in expectation of the coming work of the new covenant on the other. And they would have known, too, the primary difference to expect when the new covenant replaced the old, since it had been made clear in the prophets. In the Old Covenant, God's law was written on tablets of stone, but in the New Covenant, it would be written on the tablet of the heart, Jeremiah 31:31-34. And the way in which this would happen was no longer through a mediator instructing the people in Torah, but through God's Spirit indwelling people, Ezekiel 36:26-27. The description of Pentecost in Acts 2, therefore, subtly indicates how the Old Covenant is given way to the New. The event was akin to the original revelation at Sinai, for the Spirit's descent, described like tongues of fire, echoes Yahweh's voice coming out of the fire on the mountain. But the very coming of the Spirit upon the people also indicates that it, rather than Yahweh's words written in the book of the law, is now the medium through which God will instruct his people. Yet this event reaches back farther still than Mount Sinai. It reaches all the way back to the Tower of Babel, where, due to human sin, God confused the languages of the people of the earth. Here, then, we witness the undoing of that event, as God enables people to speak in a common tongue, understood by all. On the first Pentecost since Christ's death and resurrection, therefore, the disciples did not, per tradition, renew their vows to the Old Covenant. Instead, they received the Holy Spirit and became members of the New Covenant. And that is what Peter describes in Acts 2, quoting from Joel to show that the Spirit's descent upon all people is a sign of the New Covenant's arrival. Quote, "In the last days, God says, I will pour out my Spirit on all people. Your sons and your daughters will prophesy. Your young men will see visions. Your old men will dream dreams. Even on my servants, both men and women, I will pour out my Spirit in those days, and they will prophesy. I will show wonders in the heavens above and signs in the earth below, blood and fire and billows of smoke. The sun will be turned to darkness and the moon to blood before the coming of the great and glorious day of the Lord. And everyone who calls upon the name of the Lord will be saved." This is Acts 2:17-21, quoting Joel 2:28-32. The wild scenes, therefore, Peter says, are not the result of revelry, but of the Holy Spirit's descent upon the people, which signals the coming of the new covenant. Yet even this harkens back to the original revelation at Mount Sinai. There, after the people had left the mountain, the Lord put his Spirit not only on Moses, but on the 70 elders as well, so that they might minister on his behalf. But when Joshua saw this, he, like the onlookers in Acts, worried that the things might spiral out of control, and he begs Moses to stop. But Moses rebukes Joshua, saying, quote, "I wish that the Lord's people were prophets and that the Lord would put his Spirit on all of them." This is Numbers 11:29. In other words, Moses expresses the desire for God's people, his firstborn son, to have the Spirit so that they might better represent God on earth. Moses' wish is finally fulfilled in Acts 2 when the church is born.